Welcome to the Global Affair Podcast, brought to you by Love Out Loud, the world's largest love-based movement, actualizing a civilization of love by 2030. My name's Nicole Gibson, and join me and some of the world's brightest minds as we bring some of the most important and controversial conversations of our time into a space of unity. It's important to know that as your host, this isn't about my personal opinion or bias, but rather an opportunity to listen with love, honesty, curiosity, and reveal the true universal experience us humans have amongst the differences. So if you love the show, please let us know by giving us a rating and tell us how to make this conversation easier for other people to jump into as well. And with that, let's get it. Chris K, welcome to the Global Affair. I know we've now attempted a few times, right? And I think it's worth mentioning because we were just talking about the hero's journey. And this is actually something I'd really want to dive into on our episode today, which we'll get to. But I'd love you to introduce yourself, your mission. Christopher K is a documentary maker, and I'm very excited to share his journey and story with you. But in your words, Chris, how would you describe your mission in the world?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on. And yeah, it was a hero's journey in itself to kick off this podcast. We had a couple of technical glitches along the way, but it sort of allowed us to get into a position to get to know each other beforehand as well, which was really cool. So I don't think there's any accidents, which is hilariously ironic going into the topics we're talking about today. A little about me. I basically have been a filmmaker for quite a while now, many, many years. And up until about 2019, I was making narrative features and shorts only. And after lockdown and all that kind of thing happened, I sort of changed my trajectory a little. The last short film I did, which was about to be a feature film, was very much an altruistic piece about homelessness. And once that sort of went by the wayside, I started realizing, are people really going to be as impacted if they watch something fictional and then just go home and go, well, I'm glad that's not my life? And I started looking at what are some of the ways we can integrate entertainment, but to a point of truth and really have a lot more of a voice in it. And basically, I'm undertaking my first major documentary now, and that's been a journey in itself because I'm learning as I'm doing it, which is incredible.
Massive congratulations. You know, one of the things that really struck me in our pre-chat was your desire to kind of hone in on just how polarized the world is and why it's so important to kind of move beyond that. Would you say that that's kind of core to your intent for this documentary?
I really do believe so. I think it's core to a lot of people's work at the moment, to be honest. There's a real push in that direction, and it's sort of taken shape over the last 4 years. And, you know, not to gauge anything by there was a turning point in 2020, but there kind of was an acceleration of sorts. And I think it's pushed people into a bigger sort of thing of getting into their discomfort and finding what they really want to do and what their purpose is. And when it becomes a thing of wanting to help other people or bring something to the world that comes from a really loving place or from the heart, it's really just one of those paths that when you start walking it, you realize how challenging it is along the way, but also it sort of points you in the direction. It's like the universe has got you and it starts taking you there to a degree. So in the last few years, I've seen that shift. It's really pushed into an area where people are, I think, are questioning the world around them. There's a lot of people that are kind of realizing that everything that they believed in may not be exactly what, you know, it appears to be. And it seems to be the fall of an empire of sorts. And I think with that comes a lot of a shakeup to a lot of people. And some stay in that zone. And if that's what they choose to do, that's okay. But I think when it comes to content and creation and things like that, I really think that we've got, well, I can only speak for myself here, but I think that's a responsibility I've got to bring to it, where it's like, this has got to be for a purpose that's bigger than myself. And it's got to be about humanity as a whole.
Oh, I love it so much. I can't wait to kind of dive deeper into these themes, but I want to stress this to the listeners. You know, what I sense in what I know so far about you, Christopher, is this is going to be a very dynamic conversation that challenges the listeners to look at maybe the areas of their own life where they've taken a side and othered, you know, whether it's people they love or maybe total strangers, and invites them to maybe actually start to look at the fact that every time we point a finger, there's three pointing back. And I think that is honestly such a poignant conversation right now. I obviously live in the United States, right? And for anyone that either lives here or is following what's happening in the States, it is a crazily polarized time. And I really agree with you that there was this this catalyst in 2020 where we had to make kind of an individual decision at scale, at mass, every single person, because, you know, I reflect on COVID as one of the only times in recorded history where we experienced something completely together as a world. Like, not even world wars were a completely unified experience. And so we got to see these camps of people that responded to it in fear-based anxiety and people that responded to it. And, you know, it was kind of the threat, I think, for many people, truly the confrontation with morality. And for other people, it sent them in the opposite direction, you know, more towards, I think, openness and gratitude and love. And I think that that was a very, very interesting thing to witness. But one of the things that I found so interesting about your reflection was the admission of, well, yeah, there were two camps that were created, and I myself kind of chose one of those camps, and the humility it takes to kind of come back around and think, well, it doesn't really matter what side of the coin you're on. Actually, we're dealing with the same coin here.
Totally. And there's a big look, I've had to get humbled massively a few times, because during that whole process, and I think everyone's journey on this is different. Some get there quicker than others. Some have been there since the 70s probably, and we just don't know. You know what I mean? They may have been aware of it, which is a hell of a burden to live with for many years. So it's a thing of looking at the contrast when there's a big separation of sorts and people start having that divisive nature. If you go into it from a point of putting yourself in a hierarchy above another group of people, no matter what the group thinks or feels against polarizing your view, you're participating in the segregation. So you're basically coming from a point of, you know, you're this, I'm that. You need to listen to me. I'm right. You're wrong. And I participated. I'm not ashamed to admit it, but it's like that came from very much a point of anger, which is basically another byproduct of fear. And fear is that main thing where people go, oh, I was angry, I wasn't scared. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of in the same ballpark. You know what I mean? It's all part of that same umbrella. And then when you get to a point where, like you said, one finger pointing out, three fingers pointing back at you, and you actually have to look inwardly and see what that's actually doing and what it does to your nervous system as a result, and all these flow-on effects that will happen in your emotional state and in your you know, your other state. And as soon as you start to move away from that and really go into that mindset of, oh, it's about actually understanding and coming from a point of compassion and being there, whatever that means, it might be with your family members, it could be on a grander scale, it could be amongst your work people, could be anything. But it always has that same kind of formula to it. That's how always has I've seen it. And it took me a while to get there. And I'm sure I've still got a journey to go, because like currently it's like, you know, you always think you know it all until you don't. And then it's like the more you know, the less you know.
Yeah. It's such a hard thing to do for so many of us though, right? To really look in the mirror and sort of admit that we could be wrong, you know, admit that the way that we've viewed a situation, perceived a situation, acted in a situation, the stance we took, that actually, you know, we were wrong, we could have potentially done better, we could have acted with more kindness and more compassion. Even in your experience now creating this documentary, what have you found, you know, what have you found in that regard? Why do you believe it is so difficult for us humans to surrender that need to be right? What lives behind that? What vulnerability is there behind that?
That's an eternal question. And it's like I've got theories. I don't think I've got concrete answers on it. But what I've come to realize, especially interviewing the scope of people. So the documentary, when it started, it actually started from a point of when I was going through that anger stage, which is hilarious. That's when the inception happened. And then it was a thing of, I'm going to do this and I'm going to tell them what's what and I'm going to, and then that sort of died off and I took a detour for a while and I had like about a year and a half to really reflect on it and take a different shape. And then once I started getting guests that I just knew that they were perfect for it. And this goes from people who are in science, you know, that are like neuroscientists and people who used to be scientists and left that field and they're now hypnotherapists, trauma counselors, what it does to the body, all these kind of things. And I've expanded and expanded. The whole conversation of the specifics of 2020 is actually not even there anymore. And what I started realizing the more I got into it was, wow, we've been hurting for a much, much longer time than the last 4 years. This is ongoing. And what the humbling factor of it all is the more I learn as I'm doing this, because as I interview each person and each interview goes for 4 hours and they're just brilliant people and they've got their niche. And I feel like that's what's missing from so many documentaries is the exploration and not being scared to actually raise more questions than provide answers. So as soon as you're providing answers and saying, this is what I want to make, I know everything, and now I'm talking down to you like I'm on a pedestal, I think you've lost already, because it's like you're in an echo chamber, because the only people who are going to listen to that are people who understand where you're coming from. But I go into this now. Yeah, totally. And I go into that space now with, I can't go into judgment mode. I can't even have preconceived notions. I literally have to be as neutral as possible and open to everything being said, because as you know, Nicole, even with your own work, it's the best kind of creativity comes from a point of curiosity. It's always the first step is you're curious to know something to grow, because that art is your growth corridor too. And as soon as I've seen people talk about it on every level, I realized, wow, there's a handful of people where I could speak to them and probably get through with certain points and then I can learn from them too. But there's a whole million different individual expressions of consciousness out there. It's like it's one uniform consciousness, but we're all individual expressions. How do you reach these layers? And then I thought, well, one person in this interview will reach this person and maybe plant a seed, and it might germinate next week. It could germinate in 10 years. And it's more open to the thing of, turn that camera in on yourself at the end of this and actually ask the questions and adapt this to your own life. And I think it's once we get the tools to be able to do it, then we're okay. And bringing it back to your question, it's having the tools and to be able to go into that space, because it's a terrifying space to go into sometimes, to actually be self-critical and look at every single factor of everything. And as soon as people do that, you know, they might be in a job where they don't have time to think and they work 7 days a week to feed their kids and they're a single mother or whatever it might be. And as soon as you can get through that point to make everyone just take that reprieve and go, remember who we are, remember what we're meant to be doing, and not being this product of an external environment, you know, I think that's when you sort of can be on your way. But it's such a hard question to answer in one sentence. So I'm sorry I took a detour on that one, but yeah.
No, there's so many, I think, valuable themes in there, right? Like the reflection around our unwillingness often to go to places that we would deem self-critical, you know, how difficult it can be to really look at parts of ourselves that we don't yet accept, that we don't yet love, because that's where it's all coming from ultimately, right? We don't have a comfortability yet in ourselves and our own bodies, and so we're externalizing that. It's making us feel like we're separate from other people, or we're defined in some way by our belief systems, when, you know, we're so much more than our belief systems. There's so much more that's connecting us than the things that we believe. But the question that really, you know, comes up as I'm hearing you reflect on this is your journey through this as a documentary maker, in spending, you know, hours and hours and hours now listening to people. And based on our conversation, I concluded or deducted that you're really attempting to take, you know, somewhat of an objective space here and try to keep your bias as best as you can outside of it. Have you noticed, even physiologically, your triggers and defenses start to minimize the more you've opened yourself up to people that believe very different things?
Absolutely. I didn't really think about it at the start. It sort of just happened in a very gradual way, like most things do. But that whole component of sitting in a space where it's the funniest thing in the world, especially if someone has such an incredible arrangement of knowledge and they're able to communicate it, but then in their personal life, they might do something or be someone that you don't agree with. And this isn't anyone specific. This is just a valid point.
Often this is the case, right?
Yeah. And when you come across that, there's those, like the only thing I do is turn it inward, because it's like it's not to be expressed and sit there and actually pass the judgment. But most of us pass silent judgment anyway and don't actually verbalize it in the first place. So that's the first step, is it's in your head. And then I always do that thing of where's that coming from and why? And it's like, obviously we're a product of our upbringing, and there's generational trauma passed down, and there's things that are stored in your body that you're not even aware that you're carrying, that, you know, could be incidents from your teenage years or anywhere else. And it gives you this structure of what things should and shouldn't be. And then what you realize, and this is what I realized personally anyway, after digging through this for a while, how much of my programming actually came from external sources was incredible. And I think it's the percentage was so alarming. And I got raised on films. I was a film head from a very young age. My parents showed me a lot of old movies when I was really young, and I had this massive knowledge of cinema. And then the more I've looked at cinema now with a magnifying glass and different goggles, and I realize, wow, they really sell you some stuff. They sell you the love story of the, you know, the person always gets the other person, and then there's always this the hero's journey arc is there.
Fairy tale every time. Come on.
Totally. And then we adapt it, and it's and it's not to say that, you know, it's not a thing that we should look at and revere as something special as well. But it's the expectation that's there is where that imminent failure happens, where it's like you're expecting it to be a certain way. You're expecting people to think or act. And then you realize, wow, that I'm expecting them to think or act like I do and what I would do in these scenarios. And then you realize that that's not even you in the first place. So it's like, wow, okay, let's start doing some work here and integrate these shadow pieces, because they're obviously trying to tell me something. It gets into a very, very interesting funnel.
Yeah, I mean, there's, again, so much to unpack there, you know, how we as a society and as individuals within society have created these completely unrealistic ideals, and yet at the same time have a society that is, you know, somewhat apathetic. Like, it's a very weird kind of, you know, we all have these ideals and expectations that we're constantly disappointed by life for not meeting, whilst failing to actually do that self-reflection. You know, look at ourselves in an analytical or critical way to try to figure ourselves out and be better, you know. But I think we've been sold the idea that it should all come from the outside, you know, that we need to try to control our environment and control other people rather than controlling what's within, or figuring out what's within before we can even start to master it and have some agency over it. Just literally figure out what's there and what we're working with under all the layers. But I can hear the questions of our listeners around the documentary. So before we go into these deeper concepts, maybe give a bit of a pitch about the documentary, the kinds of conversations you're seeking to have, you know, anything that is to share, and then we can go kind of deeper into some of these themes.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's basically a lot to do with moving through stages. So how the whole thing's structured is there's a narrative film that actually runs through the documentary itself. So I've got 7 chapters that are lined up, and basically in between all the sets of interviews with 14 different people from very different walks of life. And this covers, as I said before, scientists, people from the Indigenous community that are really reconnected with nature, just to get a complete overview of, you know, every sort of way of living. And within, you know, the scope that I can do it in a 2-hour way, which is going to be very tricky, but I'm going to try my best. The story that does run through basically breaks out into chapters where we see very common stories that are very relatable to many people. One is, you know, a person who's been in the same job working for 50 years and stuck in that role and hates going in every day and only lives for that and realizes, I've never looked for anything more, but, you know, I'm too old to maybe go and do that now. And how that impacts them directly. A mother who's lost a child and the trauma that comes with it, and then generational traumas that get passed down to, you know, whoever's remaining and everything else. programming through Hollywood, you know, through media and bits and pieces like that. Relationships were a big one. They weren't actually meant to be in the original thing, but I couldn't avoid doing it because everything kept coming back to it. And these are people who basically don't realize the other person's a mirror for them. And then the pieces in them that you need to fix are actually within yourself, and it's that whole conversation. So where the themes...
That's starting to emerge actually through the interview process. So
massively.
For the subject, it's somewhat of a therapeutic process as well, I imagine.
Absolutely. And it comes through into a thing. This is the thing. I want to make sure that this doesn't give you a certain way that you have to be in order to get through all these hoops and how to move through these things. It's basically, here's an overview of humanity, and these are the ways that we can elevate our consciousness together. And the way we do it together is actually not by, you know, everyone watering themselves down in order to be in a group mentality. That's where I think people go wrong. It's about remaining the strongest individual expression that you can be in order to help the collective itself. So it's basically you literally leading by example and the ways to go and do that in order to achieve that. So I'd call it more, it's a documentary, it's a film, but it's also kind of a guidebook it's like having a little playbook on how to sort of navigate these things and get around them and ask questions that may not have been asked before.
I think that's, yeah, such a beautiful intention for what you're creating, you know, through letting others have this sort of deep window into someone else's humanity, helping that kind of bridge maybe the distance that they feel in themselves, you know, because it's vulnerability is so powerful for that reason. When we see someone else going there, willing to reveal themselves, we can't help but begin to self-reflect, right? It becomes safe to self-reflect. I've seen that so much in my work, but I'm curious, if you don't mind sharing, or it's not kind of, you know, confidential until the documentary is released, what are some of the most kind of confronting ideas that you've had to kind of be with and sit with just personally for you as you've gone through some of these interviews?
For me, definitely the biggest ones have been relationship reflection, massively, massively big for me. In terms of basically having to look back at the past as well and sort of not see where you went wrong, because that's not the way to sort of look at it, but what it sort of did was make me realize that every negative trait I may have seen in a former partner or in a former relationship were actually things of myself that I needed to fix. And hearing that from people it's so hard. It was very, very hard. It took a toll. Even I had, like, I went through even, you know, the physical repercussions of that at points where I'm like, I know it was doing something to my nervous system, and I really had to find where it was coming from. And that was probably my most major shift. And I think there was the way I was raised, and one of the big things there was, you know, it was okay to be vulnerable, but only for a minute. Like, and then just, you know, put on a face and let's push through, you know. And I really had to sit. Totally. And the funny thing, it controls another factor, Nicole, because as a director, when I direct a feature film or something that I've written, control is everything to me, because I need to actually control how the actors say their lines, what this edit's going to be. And I do editing as well, so I've got to cut all those pieces. Then I've moved into a documentary space where I'm like, I don't know what's going to come out of your mouth. I have no clue. So it really made me let go of that control component. And one of the other big ones, which I always had a thing with the schooling system, growing up, especially with two older brothers, there was always a massive flouting to authority that I know was in me from very young. It was my father raised me to question authority, but also said, well, but except for me, I'm an authority figure, you can listen to me. And I was like, huh, I don't think you can train it one way and then have it the other way. It's either all or nothing in that direction. But one thing that I saw with the schooling system, speaking to people who, you know, have PhDs and have gone through the education system themselves and have seen the pitfalls of it, And a lot of people really get triggered by this when you're like, hang on, you look at even the school day where it's you're working from the exact same hours as you're going to plan to do as an adult, and you're going to do the 9 to 5, and that's what you're meant to be doing. It's like it's the training for the real game. And then when you start seeing it, and it's like, it's not to say it's bad. It's like education is very important in a lot of ways. But when you look at what structure can possibly do to people to keep them under that thing of not knowing themselves and not to be able to question anything or ask questions or think critically, I think it's a really slippery slope. And that was a huge thing to hear from other people who are in the education system. It was incredible.
And what was the, did they come into the interview kind of having this position that they wanted to explore? Do you give them that kind of context?
Yeah, it's been, I have a three-way rule with this. And what I do is I give them three options. I say, you can either know all the content I'm going to ask you is in every question written down, a roundabout outline, or nothing at all. And most have chosen nothing at all or an outline, but none of them have asked for the questions, which I find really interesting. And as soon as you go into that space of even having the area, the questions, I don't think they're ready for some of them. But the beauty of it is when it's filmed and when it's done, it's a safe space. And how I've made sure of this isn't to do what, you know, some of the world famous documentary makers have done in the past, where they do go in with an obvious agenda and they basically can take every single tiny sound bite out of something and adapt it in order to say something completely different. And I've actually put a disclaimer in writing to every single person I've interviewed where nothing you say will be taken out of context, and you're able to review your own words before it goes out. And it gives them this incredible safe space to speak totally from that sole point. And it's really, you see it coming through them like a download rather than filtering it through the brain and the mouth as they say every sentence and being careful what they say, which I think is really powerful.
Totally. Yeah. What's the most confronting question you've asked so far to one of the guests? what you would deem?
There was one in particular. It went a direction I didn't think it was going to go. And I only changed, it was the third interview I did, and I asked, we had a whole section on trauma, and for some reason, this question, actually, I didn't have it pre-written beforehand, it just came to me as he was speaking, and I ended up asking, on a personal level, what was the most traumatic thing you've ever experienced? And it was a really hard answer to hear. I won't go into the ins and outs of it because it was quite a personal thing. But it brought up a lot of tears, a huge emotional tidal wave that he hadn't really spoken about before publicly or to people in a long time. And it was regarding something really, really hard. It was a death. And to see that come through, it was confronting, and I thought, wow, it was heavy to watch. And we asked him if he'd like to stop, and, you know, we don't have to do it. And he was like, no, if there was ever a place where I was able to get this out, it just feels right to do it now. And he stepped into it, and at the end of the interview, he thanked me for the question. And I just thought it was just such a powerful place. Now, if that doesn't make it in the film, that's still an impact enough. Like, that's changed him. And that's changed me hearing it. I was not only just so honored to hear someone in that vulnerable state, you know, talking to me with that much strength and conviction in what they were saying in front of two cameras running on them. It was just, that's one of the most memorable experiences so far, for sure.
Yeah, that's to really be with someone in grief, I think, is such a sacred just thing to see, to feel. You know, grief is, I think grief has the power to change us more than any other experience.
I agree.
I kind of think that it's, you know, in some ways it's the opposite emotional experience to love, because we can only really grieve something that we love, right? It's the loss of the thing that we love, and it brings us so close to the impermanence and the fragility of life, where we realize we don't actually have control. And this was the other question that was swimming through my mind, your reflection around going from a creative environment where you had complete control to then surrendering control to create, you know, to see what was going to come through these guests. That's a very, very powerful pivot, I think, as a creator. I'd love you to just reflect on that.
Sure. So it sort of happened in a very weird way. And I knew I was going into a corridor of really having to do some self-reflection. And, you know, look, you know, without bringing it up every single time, but 2020 and onwards really did have that shift. And I think it impacted a lot of people more than they realize. And there's a lot of people walking around still carrying grief itself and trauma and everything else because it was a really hard time. And the world could feel it. You could feel it on a grander scale. It was definitely something very large, and it reminded us that we are all interconnected, and everyone's feelings and emotions are actually on a very fractalized level all the way up the ladder. And I went through, I started in 2021 with a very rough outline. And then I thought, wow, I've really got to implement trauma into this and some real things about heavy loss and grief and how that impacts the average person and what it does to the soul and everything else and the heart. And then I went through the most traumatic experience of my life for a year and a half where I was really unwell for quite a while. And I went through a lot of hard sort of, it was the hardest corridor I've ever had to go through. And I hung up everything. And what I realize now in the aftermath of it is, firstly, I'm glad it happened, which is insane to say, but I actually am happy that it did, because it's put me on a path to a lot more strength and understanding about myself. And also what it did was it redirected me into a point where I'm like, I think I need to use my creative gifts not only to help the world, but to help myself. Because if you don't help yourself, you're no use to others anyway. So it's like you have to actually do, and if I can do both at the same time, fantastic. And then where it sort of led after that was I really saw in hindsight, after learning and doing all this research into building this work, that the illness that I went through was actually grief. It was loss, and it was the impact physically on my body and everything else that had happened. And, you know, like you said, the opposite of love, you know, being grief, absolutely. And I think it's in that same family with fear, and they sort of, they go together. And what ended up happening was I saw in hindsight, I was able to see everything, which is perfect vision, and look at it all and think, okay, so where this has led me is basically to a point of realizing that my old self has died. Because when you're unwell, you're trying everything you can to claw back to a former version of yourself that you cannot possibly be anymore. And when you see that path and you're fighting like crazy to go back to how you looked, felt, whatever it may be, I just think it's a recipe for disaster. You're swimming upstream, and it's a really hard way. And as soon as you learn how to get in flow again and rebuild a better version of yourself and move into that space with courage, that's where it led me to do this, where that's where I knew I wanted to do it. And it was a thing of, I have to release control, because all I'm trying to do is control getting back to a former version of myself, or control the illness that I had, or control this. And then with the project, I was doing the same, and with my work, and I'm like, I've got to let go on every single layer to see where this leads. And it led to the best place possible, because the, you know, the universe caught me in its hands, and it keeps doing that every time I have faith and let myself drop. You know, whatever you want to call it, or whatever you want to reference it to, it's got my back. And I just feel like, you know, that's when you're on your correct path, that's what happens. It does have you.
This is such a powerful message, I think, coming back to the hero's journey, like this process of initiation, right? That when I often, when I'm running events, I work with a model called Rite of Passage, which mirrors the hero's journey in a lot of ways, but it's kind of categorized in three parts: the separation from familiar, or separation from the comfort zone, the liminal space, and then the reintegration. And the liminal space is when you're basically, you know, going through this passage that you're describing, where you're not who you were anymore, and you're never going to be who you were again, but you're not yet who you're becoming. And just like the caterpillar and the chrysalis, you're literally you know, your mush, and it's so terrifying. And I think one of the really challenging things about this rite of passage process or this hero's journey process that all of us are going to have to go through more than once in our life. You know, there's many rites of passages and initiations, and if we don't choose them, they're going to choose us. It's going to be the death of someone we love, or a health complication, or a breakup, or, you know, whatever it is, life will inevitably take us through those passages, and we're meant to become someone new. But so often the sort of societal echo when we're going through those moments is, oh, Chris, we miss the old you. What happened to you, mate? You know, where did, and I think that that can be such a damaging thing that, you know, our friends and our families are saying this probably with good spirit, but I think it's a lack of education of what this change process actually means, because none of us were initiated properly as kids. You know, like very few of us in the Western world had proper initiations from girlhood to womanhood and from boyhood to manhood. So we don't know that this is actually a process that is quite sacred. And we need to be able to hold those in our lives that we love that are going through that journey in liminal space, you know, with tenderness, and to appreciate the vulnerability and to not impose our opinions, because that's the time for that person who's going through that to actually get to decide who they want to be next.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that you learn a lot about other people too in your life when you go through those things. But then you also get the opportunities to throw the ladder back. And because we're in that student-teacher philosophy constantly, and it's like you're either always learning or teaching, as soon as you go into that space of having gone through something, and then you're much more primed to be able to see it in other people. And when you see that, you've got two options. And one of the bad ones, which comes straight from the ego, is to say, oh, I've been through this. It's not, yeah, blah, you'll be okay, pat you on the back. It's like their journey's totally different. They've got to go through their own motions. And much the same as in a therapeutic sense, they've got to come to their own realizations. It's like they have to actually face this themselves. They can't be told. Now, there's assistance. You can go and get help if you need it. I went to people who were incredible for me. And it was what aligned at the time. And I had to really, you know, hang up a lot of preconceived thoughts that I used to have and step into that new version. But people around you, and I really feel that, and this isn't, you know, this isn't an insulting thing, but I do see this as a really normal human thing, is the statement misery loves company is a very true thing. And when you see that people want to pull you back into a black hole rather than pull you out of it, even if they're in one themselves, it just says so much about their character and who they are as people. And I'm very, very blessed to be able to see both sides of the coin there. Like there were some people that just still to this day don't understand what metamorphosis I went through and what I have to do to adjust. And then there's the ones that do the, well, I love you and I don't get it, but, you know, it's like do your thing and, you know, you've got my support and it's cool. Yeah. And then with that, I think even comes new relationships with people. You start opening up to different groups and stuff, because most people, let's face it, they get to an age in their life, they're not taking out classified ads for new friends anymore. They're done. They're like, the book's full. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not open to anything now. It's like this.
I've got five. That's it. That's
where yep. And they set it and they max it and that's it. And I look at that as at one point in time, I think I did do that for a very short stint. And I've had some friends I've known since the age of six. I've had very long friendships with some really beautiful people. It's one thing that I know is my highest blessing in life, is I'm just surrounded by great friends. And then looking at it as a thing of who comes and goes and who you can't talk to, and just to bring it slightly back to the project, it's meeting them where they're at. And I think one key word that you said before was reintegration, and that's one of the most key components of that hero's journey, and something that I really want to make the forefront of this whole documentary, is it's all well and good to go and work on yourself, to go and do an ayahuasca ceremony, to go to church, whatever you need to do, right? Whatever you need to do to bring you to a different level or whatever you want to do. But if you can't reintegrate that into that 3D matrix reality where you can go into situations that normally used to actually trigger your emotional state, and you can sit there and it doesn't, and you just observe it and let it pass by and all that kind of thing. I think that's the most powerful Zen-like position to be in, rather than we all disappeared, moved away from society, lived on a mountain and there's 10 of us. It's an echo chamber after 20 years. It's like you're all just telling each other how wonderful you are and no one's really growing. And I think growth comes with the hard corridors of that reintegration, and that's the most important part of that hero's journey for me.
I completely agree. I mean, what happens, right, when you don't have a proper reintegration is this psychological fragmentation, you don't anchor yourself in that new person. And so these patterns, you know, and these places of familiarity of the old self just kind of start to pull at you, but you can't be that person anymore. It doesn't fit. But you're not really standing in that new person, that new identity. I see it a lot with people that are sort of navigating change. I mean, obviously my background was in mental health, right? And one of the stats that used to really just strike a chord with me is 90% of adult mental health challenges are triggered or re-triggered during periods of change, because we don't know how to navigate change. Like, as a society, we don't have change resilience, and that's becoming, I think, more and more difficult the more life becomes convenient.
Because yeah.
Change is meant to test us. It's meant to challenge us. We're meant to be uncomfortable during those periods. But the willingness and the resilience to actually get uncomfortable, I think, is waning. And that's something that I really believe needs to be addressed as a society. So I'm so happy to hear that you're doing this, you know, through your documentary and your art form.
And, you know, there's so many people whose work is leading into that direction as well. And it's like it can come in the form of even being a counselor. It's like, you know, you could be a holistic counselor or anything like that and actually help people through those corridors. And I think everyone's got a part to play. And it's funny, we said this on the when we last spoke, but that whole thing of the hero's journey, it used to be that learning curve of that big arc would come once every 5 years and you'd have a real chaotic moment and then it'd sort of taper off for a while. And we seem to be getting it on a fortnightly basis these days, where it's really in acceleration mode and it's really pushing. And that layer of discomfort that comes with that, I think it's like training a muscle. Like it gets better and better the more you do it, and the more you shy from it, the more you lose that muscle memory, and then it's a recipe for disaster. And the sad thing is, the way everything's structured now, kids don't have the resilience that they once used to be able to even practice or exercise that muscle anymore, which is really sad.
And very, very true. And what would your... Obviously, your message, you know, broadly is going to be in the documentary. So I want to talk about, you know, the release and what we need to do as a community to support you to get there. But before that, what would you say, you know, is your biggest message to that point, to our listeners, around comfortability with change?
I think... It's really hard to give it a broad brush, because everyone's got a different sort of approach that they have to take within themselves. But I really think it's about conquering that first step. It's that, you know, the first step is the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, is always the case. And it's basically start it with taking a minute to yourself. And it's like, just actually look inwardly and take some time to reflect, go away and get some air. And it's like, you look at all the things around you where there are possible excuses to not do that. And you can say the economy is insane, politics is just out of control and it's got our focus, or, you know, it's I've got to work 10 jobs in order to make this week's rent, whatever it might be. But as soon as you pull away from that and you take that first initial step, and the biggest part is not just taking the step, it's actually having the courage to use your throat chakra and communicate it back to someone else. Because when you do that, you're quite surprised at the reaction sometimes. And there's been people where I catch myself now doing it, where I'm like, do I say it? Yeah, they're not going to know. Just leave it and leave it there. Yeah. And now I'm like, you know what? Let's just open up and word it in a very generalized way. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you get this reciprocity that comes from them. And you're like, oh, wow, I never would have thought that I'd have this conversation with this, you know, person at the bus stop or wherever it might be. It's like, oh, wow, okay, this was not what I expected today. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a factor of not only doing this for yourself, but also taking the step forward to meet other people where they're at and be open to listening. That's my biggest one, is like, if someone's got a point that you disagree with or they're so locked into it, ask yourself why, and ask why it pisses you off. Because that whole thing of the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, I think is just the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. It's very true.
I love that so much. I love Jordan Peterson's quote, that the truth is your ultimate adventure. You know, and so many of us are looking for more of an adventure in life, and we think we need to make all these radical changes. But if you just wake up tomorrow and make a decision that you're going to be more honest and actually say what you're really thinking for the next 24 hours, I would bet any money that your life will radically change just in that period of time. Like that's something that is so within all of our control. You know, many people are wanting to change their life. They wake up every morning. They don't want to participate in the life that they're currently in. To me, that's such a powerful, real, tangible way that you can action with, you know, no resources other than yourself and your heart. And just watch the way that your life starts to transform when you start to do that.
100%. And you don't need millions of dollars to do it. Like you said, you don't need all these, we have to have a vacation and we have to do, it's like you can do it today. You can do it to the postman when they drop off your mail. It doesn't matter when you do it. You can exercise it at any point in time. And I think more and more people are getting there, Nicole. And it's like, I don't know if because I'm more aware of it now, but I'm seeing a lot more people in the search, if that makes sense. So they're not quite, they don't know what they're looking for. And they're not like a lot aren't quite at that point. And it's like some are well beyond that too. It's like it's all different layers. But when you see the common theme, it's that it's exactly that. It's like, you know, they want it. What more is there and what am I doing? And as soon as you ask any of those questions to yourself, I think you're on the way.
I really agree with that. I think the constructs of Western society and celebrity culture, I think a lot of these things are coming undone. They're being challenged, the 9-to-5, having to work from an office. So many of these structures are being challenged, and that's an amazing thing. You know, that's there's real opportunity in that for us to actually co-create. And I get that same sense too, that more and more people are realizing, hey, maybe there's more to the story here. Maybe there's more that we can actually, you know, create that's beyond the template that we were, you know, programmed to believe was the only way, being a slave to the system, etc. I'm excited about that. I mean, that's what gets me out of bed every day. And I know, you know, anyone listening to The Global Affair, they probably feel similarly. And so share with us, how much are you raising for your documentary? What is the most supportive email you could receive in your inbox at the moment? And then I want to talk about when the release is going to likely be.
Sure. So there's two tiers to this, and it's quite funny how this all played out too. But the main push, I've had two executive producers on board that have come to the table, and that's with larger amounts. I started from a point of thought where I thought I need all of the budget in order to get started, and it got nowhere. And then I realized this throws back to an 80s movie that people may not remember, but I'll give you two references, Field of Dreams and Wayne's World 2. They've actually basically got the same message in them, which is if you build it, they will come. And as soon as you start your motion that way, and I think that's where a lot of people fall down, it's that thing of, and I had to get really humbled with this one, where it was just throw yourself out there and start. And then the more I did, the more it magnetized what I needed to continue it. And I think until you step into that space, you can't do it with a plan. And it's like, that's always what I've done, but now I have to do it a different approach. So executive producers are on board. I've got two. There are still slots for more. But on the $75,000 of the budget, which is allocated to a crowdfunding side, so it's basically through the Australian Cultural Fund, and there's a few other avenues it can go through as well via the website on anavasi.tv. And that basically $4,000 in the first month, and that was without really a real hard push for a campaign. So I know it's something that people want, and films are expensive, and to do them right, that it actually is more expensive for people to be able to see them. It's the marketing on the back end and everything else to get it out there. And I'm confident we'll get there, but any help would be incredibly appreciated too along the way, and helps out me and my team and everyone involved. It'd be beautiful.
Of course. So we're going to put the link below where they can actually go and directly donate to the crowdfunding campaign. Is that right?
Yeah, that's cool. That'd be great.
And then the any executive producers that are looking for their next project, also you'd be open to meeting.
Absolutely.
So, okay, incredible. We'll put all of your socials below as well. And what about the timeline? I would love to host a showing here at my place in San Francisco.
Oh, that'd be unreal.
That would be pretty cool. But when are you expecting to release the documentary?
So the anticipated release, which is it's a hell of a deadline, but December 2025, which is at a push to get everything done and rolled out by then. I'm headlining the editing with one other person, so we're going to work like crazy, and each interview as I'm doing them are basically all getting cut into pieces and everything else. But it's a monumental task, but it's something that I know I've been able to do before with a previous film, and it's mm-hmm. You know, everyone's confident that that's where we're going to get to that finish line. And it's a completion year, 2025 as well, being a numerological number 9. So, you know, that's just the icing on the cake for me to get it done by that point.
Yeah, well, maybe like releasing it in the 1 year, that feels good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's like it's going to lead straight into that new energy, new everything. It'll be beautiful.
Yeah, the film that brings everyone into the new earth. Well, we're backing you, we're supporting you, and cheering you on. I think the work that you're doing is so needed, and I think you are 100% the right man to be doing it.
Thank you
so much for sharing with us.
No, thank you, Nicole. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for the conversation. It's awesome talking to you.
Likewise. And yeah, we'll see you in the community. I love to invite our guests to do Q&As with our community, so jump into the community with us, and I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of people that have some questions for you as well.
Fantastic. Will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris.